Networking is presented by Maya Strategy Group, a leading market research and strategy consulting firm, helping clients in the pet care and animal health industries navigate strategic challenges for almost two decades. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pet Working. I'm Peter Kenseth, Vice President and Partner at Maya Strategy Group, and I am here today with Dr. Brendan McKenzie, Head of Veterinary Education at Loyal for Dogs. You may have seen a short clip that Brendan and I recorded at Western Vet a little ways back, and I wanted to bring him on the show to further extend on that conversation and get a little bit more into what Loyal is doing, when we can expect to see their therapies come to market, and some of the challenges and the roadmap that they took to get to where they are today. So Brendan, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to see you again, and welcome to Pet Working.
Thanks. My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, I know we had a chance to touch base briefly, in between Western Vet and now, and I really enjoyed that conversation. And I'm hoping we can share and recreate a bit of that for our audience here today. But, one of the things that I don't think we touched on when we were at Western Vet, we were focusing more on the high level details of the product and what you guys are doing, but we didn't really get into the roadmap and the journey that you took to get here. And as we were talking about it, you mentioned, what hit me as profound is that there really hasn't been this initiative to tackle aging in the medical community. Certainly, it's the thing that we all try to avoid. Nobody wants to grow old. Everybody wants to stay forever young. We certainly want that for our dogs because, they're the children we have that we almost always outlive. And that's certainly a heart-wrenching experience for any pet parent. But, I thought it was very insightful how you said, we've always just accepted aging as inevitable and nobody's ever thought about tackling aging in a preventative way. And yet that's what you all are doing. Can you talk a little bit about, how you develop that mindset and where you came up with that idea of aging is something that we can prevent, so to speak?
Well, the credit, of course, all goes to Celine Helly, who our CEO. She's the one who founded the company, and she's the one who, has this unique combination of skill sets. She has the scientific acumen to understand the biology of aging and the potential targets for therapy there. Also, she has the ability to, raise money to form a company and to galvanize a team, put people together to do the work. And the insight that led to the starting of Loyal and that I think underlies a lot of what we do is that biology is not, that aging is not magical, inevitable, immutable. It's not just a black box fact of the universe. Aging is just another aspect of biology. We age for the same reasons that we grow and that we get sick and that we get better when we get sick, because things are happening in our body. And those are things that are comprehensible, that we can study scientifically, we can understand. And once you understand aging as a biological phenomenon, then you have targets for therapies. You can do things to alter that. You can slow the process down, potentially one day even reverse elements of it. So the fundamental idea is that for most of human history, I think we've had so few effective tools to change the process of aging and the life cycle that we've tended to just psychologically have to accept it as an inevitability and move on. And I think now after decades of good quality basic science research on aging and how it works, we're at a point where we can go past that and we can start thinking of it as a potentially solvable problem.
Yeah, no, I think it's a super, it is one of those things that, once you hear it, it makes a lot of sense, right? But I think there are those roadblocks to it where, until certain perceptions are challenged, they just tend to be accepted. And I know, it's interesting, when you talk about the concept of biological age, I first got tuned into Loyal. I was doing another project looking at human diagnostics, and I was engaging with folks at a company called Viome, and we were looking at human diagnostics as an analog for potential entry into the animal diagnostics market. And they mentioned, you know, there's a company called, we were talking about their algorithms and things. And they said, you know, there's a company called Loyal that they've got a great algorithm and, you know, they're doing some really exciting work with the dog aging project. And I started looking into you guys. And, you know, it's really profound to see and to think that we're on the cusp of having a therapy that you have very promising clinical evidence, as we talked about, a reasonable expectation of effectiveness that the FDA has granted, that this therapy can prolong and extend quality of life in dogs. And to me, that is super exciting. So I know you have Loyo 1 and Loyo 3, which are targeting IGF-1, and then you have Loyo 2, which is focused on improving metabolic health. Can you talk a little bit, you know, how did you guys get from, you know, algorithm to, you know, understanding that IGF-1 is the, you know, the factor that is accelerating aging and causing shorter lifespan in large dogs? And you know, with Loyo 2, you know, to what extent did your algorithm kind of feed into that and bring us to where we are today?
So the core idea at the heart of the company initially was the concept that large breed dogs have a shorter lifespan than smaller dogs, and that is a consequence of intensive artificial selection. We've bred them to be big, and that includes, among other things, high levels of growth hormone and IGF-1. And we know from basic biology research in rodents and other species that high levels of growth hormone and IGF-1 are associated with shorter life expectancy, because those things have effects other than just making the body larger. They accelerate aging and contribute to a variety of metabolic dysfunctions that lead to a susceptibility to disease. So the initial idea was maybe we can target that and help mitigate the discrepancy in lifespan between large and small dogs. And the idea of measuring biological age, looking at epigenetic markers, for example, came afterwards. It was one of our ways of thinking about how do we measure the aging process? How do we really assess impact in addition to just measuring lifespan for any therapy that we develop? And we have since kind of moved away from that. You know, it's impossible to be all things to all people. And we've had to focus on the core of our business, which is developing drugs to extend healthy lifespan in dogs. But I think it's really interesting that it raises the concept of biological compared to chronological age. We always think of age in terms of numbers of years or months or weeks or however long an individual in a particular species is likely to live. And that's not mutable. But biological age is the actual impact of aging and the physical processes of aging on susceptibility to disease and health and function. And that is potentially mutable. So I think that the two go together. The idea of measuring biological age is part of the larger concept of how do we understand aging in a way that makes it a targetable process that gives us some tools to slow it and extend healthy lifespan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for, you know, I think we're all familiar with the idea of, you know, seeing the, you know, 85, 90 year old person who is, you know, going down the ski slopes or still playing, you know, pickleball and doesn't look to show, you know, the effects of their age. And you're shocked when you hear how old they are. We certainly see that in dogs occasionally too. Would it be fair to say that, you know, your therapy is going to create more dogs that, you know, people look and guess that the dog might be 9 or 10 when it's actually 15?
We certainly hope so. I mean, I think that those are all external signs of things that ultimately trace back to quality of life, good quality health and function. We don't care necessarily whether a dog has a gray muzzle, but a gray muzzle may be a marker, a visible sign of things that are happening internally that do negatively affect health and function. So, you know, we're developing drugs to extend healthy lifespan. And the emphasis there, of course, is on healthy. And we want to keep dogs alive longer by making them healthier. And I love it if that turns out to, you know, give us dogs who are chasing balls and grabbing frisbees and just generally enjoying their lives vigorously for longer.
Yeah. It's so, you know, so you guys are just kicking off your clinical trials right now, right? They've just started a few months ago. Is that correct?
Yes, our first clinical pivotal efficacy study, which is the large-scale field trial that one conducts for the FDA in order to get approval for medication, that just started at the beginning of this year. That's called the STAY study. And that is involving our product LOI-002, which, as you mentioned earlier, addresses some of the metabolic dysfunction that occurs with aging. So we're going to have about 55 clinical sites, mostly in private practices around the country. We're going to have about 1,000 dogs enrolled, and we're expecting the study to last about 4 years. It's going to look at dogs who are 10 years and older, and who are 14 pounds up to about 180 pounds, a fairly broad limit, because metabolic dysfunction occurs in all dogs, regardless of size or breed, as they age. And our goal is to see if we can extend lifespan and hopefully as well markers of health and function and quality of life for longer in those dogs who are taking the medication as opposed to those on placebo.
And so what exactly are the endpoints that you're using to, I know, one of the other things, and looking back at the notes I took from our earlier conversation, you mentioned that potential reason why you are the first to tackle, the challenge of aging at a clinical level is because so many people have tended to view regulatory bodies such as the FDA as the enemy. And because aging isn't officially classified as a disease, it's hard, it has been a challenge to create therapies for it. So talk to me a little bit about, in these trials, what are you using as your endpoints, and how did you get around that barrier of aging not being classified as a disease to go and create a therapeutic for it?
The traditional medical model looks at health in terms of diseases that impede function and quality of life, and specifically at prevention or treatment of individual diseases. And so the regulatory system, it has grown out of, an effort to work within that model to make sure that the therapies that doctors are using are safe and effective. And as it is currently structured, it requires you to have a disease to treat in order to get approval for a medication. And obviously, aging is not a disease in the traditional sense. And there's some really interesting philosophical arguments to be had about whether it's useful to call it a disease or not, or as I tend to think of it, as a risk factor for disease. But in either case, it doesn't fit neatly into that traditional medical or regulatory model. Despite that, as I think I mentioned in our earlier conversation, the FDA, is not interested at all in being, an obstacle to development of new therapies for dogs or for humans. Their goal is simply to ensure that the therapies that are out there are safe and effective. And so they've been absolutely willing to work with us to make sure that our process fits within the regulatory requirements and the law, and ultimately whatever we come up with can meet those standards. So the objective primary outcome for our clinical studies is lifespan, because our claim is going to be around extending lifespan. So we're measuring, rates of mortality in our study and hoping to help dogs to live longer. We are also taking the opportunity to measure a lot of other things, a lot of various kinds of clinical laboratory markers and clinical metrology instruments looking at, health and quality of life and function. So I'm hoping that we will be able to get a lot of really useful and interesting data out of this, not only about how our drug hopefully increases, healthy lifespan, but also about how dogs age and how that aging can be modified to give them more quality of life and a longer time with us.
And I think it's important, to note that, while the endpoint is just lifespan, because objectively that's what you can measure, I think measuring healthy lifespan or quality of life is probably more subjective and harder to do in a clinical setting. But certainly, as you alluded to, you're keeping an eye on it. And I think we had mentioned earlier, if you had the choice between taking a dog and, that is 10 years old and getting them to live to 15, with a high quality of life and, enjoying every minute of those 5 years versus getting them to live to 20 and, but maybe they're showing a lot of signs of decline in those last 5 years, despite the fact that you've managed to extend the lifespan, that, there certainly is some ethical, quandaries around that of, do we want you know, are to be keeping our dogs alive for our own sake, or do we want to be keeping them alive with that healthy lifespan, high quality of life? So that will be interesting to see, you know, coming out.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely our goal as a clinician and as a pet owner myself. You know, my goal is always quality of life, and that's, you know, what we focus on. The other thing to think about is that veterinary medicine is different in a number of ways from human medicine. And one of those is that most of our pets don't die directly as a consequence of a disease. Most of them are euthanized because their quality of life has become unacceptable. Somewhere in the range of about 80 to 85% of pets are euthanized for that reason. And so in extending health and quality of life, you are automatically extending lifespan because the endpoint of life is often the decline of quality of life and health. And so I think that it's just a natural way of approaching the problem that if you want dogs to live longer, you absolutely need them to be healthier and happier.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, it is such a strange paradigm because we, you know, we certainly do not engage in that in human medicine. And, you know, I know there's a lot of different philosophical arguments about that, but, you know, I think it's probably one of the greatest challenges, you know, any pet owner faces is, you know, coming to terms with that idea of, you know, I need to do what's right by my pet. And, you know, and that's done in conjunction with the guidance of your veterinarian, because you know, our dogs can't talk to us. They can't tell us, you know, I can deal with the pain, let me keep going. But, you know, we all obviously want to do what's best for them. And I think, you know, that's why, where we see such a tremendous focus, you know, in these last, you know, even just last year and a half, on therapies, you know, designed to extend quality of life and in our senior dogs. I know that term is just coming from Global Pet last week. I guess senior is now a not kindly looked upon term. Now it's advanced age, I think, is the PC term for our 7+ dogs. But you know, you see the prevalence of the diets. You know, at you know, you should start giving your dog this at 7 years old. We see, you know, the emergence of, you know, NAD supplements designed to promote better healthy cellular aging. And, you know, there are a lot, as we said in our first conversation at Western Vet, Brennan, you know, there are a lot of different, you know, approaches to aging that you can take out there. And, you know, I know one of your big concerns with a lot of the supplemental, you know, healthy aging solutions that are out there is that they aren't going through this FDA process. And you know, I know there's those regulatory barriers, and you know, that there's certainly a time commitment that you are all putting in to get a product to market with FDA approval, whereas, you know, other companies may not have the time or the money to invest in that process. Talk to us about, you know, is it possible to, you know, once Loyal is out on the market, you know, do you see this, you know, being utilized in conjunction with some of these existing therapies? And, you know, and talk to us a little bit about some of your concerns about, you know, the therapies that are on the market.
Sure. I'm a very strong proponent of an evidence-based approach to medicine, and there are different levels of evidence for different kinds of treatments. And my experience as a veterinarian is that, unfortunately, we're often forced to compromise between, you know, the amount of evidence or research data we have for the therapies and the availability of those therapies. It takes, as you said, a lot of time and money to develop a therapy with really robust scientific evidence behind it. For something like what we're doing at Loyal, which is, you know, the very first time that a drug will be approved for extending lifespan in any species, I think it's really important that we meet the highest bar that we possibly can. And that's the approach that we're taking. I think that it's also true that what we're doing is not the only approach. There are many targets that are possible out there, and there will be other people developing other drugs, other therapies, other supplements, diets, you know, lots and lots of lifestyle interventions. There are lots of ways to approach aging, and there's not going to be a single panacea or fountain of youth in any of them. So I'm absolutely certain that in the future, there will be combination therapies that have, you know, improved benefits. I think that it's just really important that we understand that there's a compromise between the level of evidence and the confidence we can have in the safety and effectiveness of any particular product. And when we are, you know, using something to meet a desperate need on the part of dog owners to have more good quality time with their pets, we want to be careful that we don't take advantage of that and promote things that haven't met at least a reasonable or acceptable bar, and that we're, you know, honest with people about the uncertainties. I make use of plenty of therapies that are off-label or not, you know, haven't been through the whole FDA process, because as a veterinarian, that's most of the therapies available to me. But it's really important that you get good informed consent, that you talk to people about the uncertainties and about the pros and cons and the level of evidence that you're at. So yeah, I think my concern is just that there's a lot of enthusiasm. There's a lot of drive to do things to keep our pets healthy for longer. And I would just want to make sure that people get good, reliable information and that they have available to them tools and therapies that have the highest level of evidence that we can possibly produce.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll be really exciting to see. And you know, one of the things you just said that I find phenomenal is, you know, so often when we look at veterinary medicine, it is human medicine that leads the way and veterinary medicine then follows. And here, you know, you are on the cusp of getting, as you said, the first FDA approved therapy for extending lifespan. In dogs, and so it's very much veterinary medicine leading the way. I think the only other example I can think of is PetDX, where the founder came from Illumina and was able to get liquid biopsy in dogs prior to Illumina / Grail getting it in humans. But it is so rare where we see these advances in medicine taking place on the veterinary side first. And I think that's a huge kudos to Loyal and the work that you all are doing. I'm curious, Brendan, do you feel like, you know, once there is that documented approval and, you know, ability to show that, yes, we can get an FDA approved therapy that, you know, for something that targets aging, do you think that will make it easier for the other modalities to follow suit? Potentially pursue other trials. We might see other, you know, FDA approvals on other pathways, whether it be, you know, NAD or epigenetics or things like that.
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think we're trying to forge a path here, not only scientifically, but also in terms of the regulatory approach. I think that you know, our leaders, you know, Celine and Karen, who's our head of the regulatory department, have a lot of creativity and a lot of drive to make sure that we go through this process in a way that is meeting all of the standards at the highest level, but also opening doors and laying the groundwork for future work. So I certainly hope that that's the case. And I think dogs provide a great opportunity to show that the concept is solid, that aging can be treated and that life can be extended in a healthy and a positive way. It's easier, you know, in terms of the regulatory burden, the financial burden, the time frame to do that in dogs than in humans. But dogs are a lot more close to our hearts and also a lot more realistic a model of life for humans than, say, rodents or flatworms or some of the other species that the research has been done in. So I think it's a great opportunity. I think in general, the opportunity to solve important problems in veterinary medicine and then to learn from that and hopefully solve similar problems in human medicine is one that is underused. And I agree. I think that's a great opportunity to show, you know, the One Health concept and the importance of veterinary medicine in the larger context.
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be amazing, you know, there were able to be parallels and analogs that could be applied to extending healthy lifespan in humans. I mean, obviously, given our extended lifespan already compared to dogs, I would imagine the trials, you know, the length of those trials would probably have to be somewhere on the order of 10, 20 years. And I guess that kind of gets us to, you know, where, you know, you have this reasonable expectation of effectiveness and conditional approval because you have this 4-year study, but from the data that you have already, it seems very likely that you will eventually get approval. And so the FDA is going to allow you to market that drug with this reasonable expectation of effectiveness and conditional approval. When can pet parents expect to see this in the clinic? When can I go to my veterinarian and say, I want to give this a try?
So the conditional approval process is very similar to the full approval process. The safety requirements are the same. All the manufacturing and environmental safety requirements are the same. The distinction is that for conditions for which there isn't an available therapy, and aging is certainly an example of that, and for which it's a long and complicated road to get that definitive field study done, there's a recognition that making therapies available sooner to the public may have benefits. And so this standard of effectiveness, the reasonable expectation of effectiveness, is available for that kind of situation. And so we are pursuing that for all of our products, and the approval of that RXE for LOI-001 is the first approval that we've gotten, and we're pursuing that for LOI-002 as well, which is the product that actually is ahead of the pace in terms of having a clinical study underway at the moment. And obviously, you know, timelines all depend on the scientific data, on the regulatory process. Our hope is that we will be successful at getting that conditional approval for both of those products. And if that's the case, then we would have LOI-001 potentially on the market next year, 2026. And LOI-002 on the market the year after, 2025 for LOI-001 and 2026 for LOI-002. Obviously, you know, we can't make any real predictions about that, and we're going to continue to pursue the 4-year efficacy studies for both products because it's really important that we get that data. But that's what we're hoping. So potentially within the next 1 to 2 years, we would have a product under conditional approval.
And, you know, obviously, you know, I think for most of us, you know, if it's within our financial means, you know, you could tell me, you can pay this and, you know, you will get more years with your dog. I'd do it in a heartbeat. But do you have any sense of, you know, how much can people expect to pay? Obviously, you know, there is the, you know, the issue of access to veterinary care and, you know, making therapies like this available to the greatest number of people while also balancing, you know, the need and desire to get an appropriate return on your investment and the time that you've put in to bring this to market. Where do you think you know, people can expect to see this drug priced?
The important thing is, as you say, we are interested in making an impact, and that impact is only going to be, you know, significant if we're able to make this accessible to as many people as possible. And we're talking about a preventative therapy here, so we want it to be widely available, and that gives us some opportunities there to you know, make that a reasonable price point. We're also very conscious of that issue in the development process, and we're always looking at ways that we can develop these products that allow us to then make them available, you know, and accessible in an affordable way. So this is definitely not going to be, you know, an outrageously expensive sort of niche product. I mean, we're really seeing this as a routine part of veterinary preventative care. The exact numbers obviously will have to depend on, you know, where we end up at the end of the whole process and how long it takes. But, you know, we're hoping that we're going to be in the same ballpark as a lot of the preventative medicine that's already available for veterinarians and for pet owners.
So along the lines of a flea and tick or a heartworm or something like that?
Exactly. I mean, this is intended to be used in a similar way as a sort of a lifelong preventative. Obviously, initial approval will be limited to certain age groups, and we'll keep going and keep doing research to make sure that, you know, we have benefits in other age groups as well. So hopefully in the long run, we'll end up with something that, you know, just becomes incorporated into the routine preventative healthcare plan.
Wow. To that end, have you had discussions with pet insurance companies, you know, about either being approved for reimbursement? I know most plans, if it is a prescribed therapeutic, most pet insurance companies will cover it, you know, subject to deductibles and coinsurance, et cetera. The other avenue I can think of, you know, as you talk about being part of the standard, you know, health and wellness plan is, you know, these preventative or wellness plans that are offered both by pet insurance companies and through veterinary clinics. Do you see it? Have you given thought or consideration to either of those routes?
I think there's absolutely, you know, a logic there to the idea that if, you know, we can show that our product extends health and delays age-associated disease, that that is not only beneficial, you know, to the pets and the pet owners, but from a financial point of view, it reduces the cost of treatment later on in life. And that should be of interest to insurers. You know, the insurance industry is complicated, and the economics and the regulatory environment are beyond a mere veterinarian like myself to fully understand. But I certainly think it makes sense that if from an insurance company point of view, your goal is to preserve the health of your clients so that the expenditures on healthcare are lower in the long run, a preventative medicine that delays age-associated disease and extends health would be, you know, something you'd want to encourage and support.
Absolutely. And, you know, and given that pet insurance is underwritten as P&C insurance, and in general, the rates are raised every year because, you know, as your pet gets older, it becomes more likely that they will incur more costly medical treatment. You know, there is a significant financial benefit to pet insurance companies to keep your dog alive longer because they get more years of premiums out of you. And the older years tend to be the most expensive premiums, but at a certain point, because, you know, pre-existing conditions are excluded if you switch policies, you know, in general, once you are on board with a particular pet insurance provider, you stay with them and through the life of your pet. So I can see strong financial benefit as well as, you know, compassionate and medical benefit to making that reimbursable. So that's really cool. I hope you guys are able to work something out, and I'll look forward to following that in the future. So Brennan, I know we're, you know, coming up on time here, but you know, we think next year, so 2025 for Loyal One, that's a long
to get checked.
Doorbells and meetings. One sec. So Brennan, you know, I know one of the things a lot of people who have been listening are going to be wondering is, you know, we talked about when can I go to my vet? When is this going to be available? And I know you said sometime next year. I personally am looking at Peony, who is here beside me. She's going to be turning 10 in December. And obviously, you know, I think like most people with a senior or advanced age dog, I keep having to correct myself on that. They, you know, they're looking for any possible option they have to ensure that they get more time with their dog and more quality time. Do you have a sense of early 2025, late 2025, or is it really just subject to, you know, how things progress through the FDA, and you know, we should just kind of keep an eye out and watch for the press releases?
Yeah, I don't think that I can be much more of a crystal ball than that, than to say hopefully sometime next year. As you say, it depends on, you know, the speed of the regulatory process, and also making sure that we get everything right, that we get the manufacturing and the distribution right. You know, we've all had the experience of really effective and exciting new therapies becoming available and then being oversubscribed or having a supply chain issue and then not being able to get those and use those. And that's very frustrating for everyone. And we certainly don't want to create that kind of a situation, because we expect that hopefully there will be a lot of people like you who are eager to give this to their dogs. So I think that, you know, we're hopeful that next year will be the target, and that's about as precise as I can be. I think for now, we're all going to have to stick with, you know, the old standards. You know, keep your dog a healthy weight, make sure they get plenty of exercise, keep consistent with your routine preventative care and maintenance with your vet, and hopefully this new tool will be available as soon as we can get it there.
Yeah, and brush their teeth. I've heard that it is a good predictor of extending lifespan if you can keep that dental health and keep any of those diseases that start in the mouth from you know, spreading and causing unnecessary health problems. We did an episode about that a while ago, but I think you raise a great point. You know, we don't want an Ozempic or Wegovy on our hands here, where, you know, you have the miracle therapy and, you know, it's not available to a number of people because not enough of it is being produced. So, and I think that fits very well with the ethos and the mindset that, you're already displaying as a company, with the discipline of going through the review process and making sure it's, safe, effective, and held to the highest clinical standards that you can hold it to. I don't know why we would expect anything less in terms of, making sure that you have the manufacturing and distribution and everything else down correctly. But, I think I speak for everyone when I say, this is super exciting. I think, it speaks to the universal desire of, nothing matters more than more time. And if we can give that to people and their pets, that's going to be a tremendous, tremendous breakthrough. So super excited, really happy that we were able to have you on today. I'm super excited to see, further progressions in the clinical trial process, and really looking forward to seeing, when this gets out on the market and putting it to use myself. So I'll be watching closely, and I'm sure we will see you again at future conferences. And again, thank you so much for joining us on Petworking.
Well, thank you for having an interest in this. I'm always excited to talk about it, and I hope we'll have more to say soon.
I have no doubt that you will. So Brendan McKenzie, everyone. Head of veterinary education and also a practicing veterinarian, if you couldn't pick up from his commentary during the episode. Brennan, thank you for taking some of your time to join us. I know you said your work week started on Sunday, and I'm sure you have other patients that you need to attend to, but thank you for taking the time to fill us in, and we really appreciate having you. This is Peter Kenseth with Petworking, everyone, and appreciate you all taking the time to listen, and we'll see you again soon. Take care. Working is presented by Maya Strategy Group, a leading market research and strategy consulting firm, helping clients in the pet care and animal health industries navigate strategic challenges for almost two decades.